Blog Talk Radio.
Burnside's going down south. I was going to say some shit about the show tonight, but screw that. I didn't feel like it. Anyways, this is your mother's medicine cabinet. This is your host, Frank Reardon, who's as sick as shit. And I should actually call it the your mother's medicine. Well, it is your mother's medicine cabinet because I took some Percocet out of there tonight. Anyways, our guest is, I don't even know how to say the guy's name, Beasley Barrington. Let me see if I got that correct. Anyways, he runs Dog on a Chain Press, and we'll just bring him on now. Hello?
I am where I am. How we doing?
Did I say your name correctly? Beasley Barrington?
Yeah, Beasley Barrington works. I don't know if there's any other way to say it. as we know, we've all been called worse. So Beasley Barrington worse.
Yeah, sometimes people just like, you know, want these like fancy pronunciations, and you've got the longest name thus far that I've had to say. So, you know, you could have been
Barrington is actually how
like
I
the third,
it, but
Beasley Barrington the third or the fourth or the tenth. So how is it going on out there in the mountains of North Carolina?
They've given you apparently the appropriate late night David Letterman poetry slot. What did you do? Who did you piss off to get stuck with a Monday night at 11 o'clock, which I'm assuming is 10 o'clock your time?
I chose Monday night because my thinking on the Monday night was that people are going to be home. Who the hell goes out on a Monday night? So I figured that they'd be home. Like, instead of running the show on a Friday or a Saturday or something like that, when people are wanting to get intoxicated and not discuss poetry or their presses and stuff, I mean, I would have wanted to. So I figured Monday would have been a good slot. Monday would have been a day for me that I know that I wouldn't have, you know, had something important to do. I never have anything important to do on a Monday.
That's fair enough indeed.
How's the weather out there in the mountains? Is it cold?
The weather's
right?
Incredible tonight. I stoked a fire. I've got a lantern lit, as always, and I'm trying to light up the mountainside as much as I can. We only have very little cell phone service out here, so hopefully it doesn't cut out on me. And I have lit one of those handy-dandy citronella keep the mosquitoes away torches for the evening, but I noticed the mosquitoes were actually flying around directly over the flame, so the bloodsuckers are meaning business this year, apparently. So I had to light a nice big smoky fire instead, and it suited me probably a lot better.
Okay, so let's get right into it. Where did Dog on a Chain Press, which you run, how did that come about? How did that all start, and how long ago, and all that?
Well, I guess we put out our first release in 2009 or such. It just came about. You know, I don't know that I have a big reason as how it came about, but it did come about. It was basically, I noticed, and I still noticed, and I don't know if maybe it's the proper word, is there is the landscape itself is glittered, or if it's littered with small presses out there. But some of the people that I was around, some of the people I admire, some of the people I was talking to at the time were finding it very hard to get into this supposed small press world. I guess I didn't realize the amount of people that were publishing in the small press world, and it seemed a little more exclusive than I would have imagined it, or maybe even a little more exclusive than necessary, if that makes sense. And our main writer, one of our main writers, Mr. Gould, Matt Gould, we just kind of got together, and I know he was at the time not so interested in sending out tens or hundreds or whatever it may be of manuscripts and hearing nothing back for 6 months, 2 years, if ever, and nothing getting published. And if you finally heard something back, it was, you know, hey, yes, we're interested, but it's been a year. And at that point, he didn't want to publish. It'd been a year. He didn't give a shit about it anymore. You know what I mean? He wanted to be able to get stuff out when he wanted to be able to get it out. And we just kind of got together and decided, well, certainly it's not that exclusive. Certainly it's not that hard to do this on our own. The whole DIY thing has always appealed to me in general, no matter what it is in life. If you want something done the way you want something done, what way is there to do it but to do it your fucking self? And that's how I and we basically entered into it. The first book we put out was a short collection called Sucking on the Fat of Life. It's no longer available. We're going to rework it and probably release it maybe next year as a complete volume of everything that he cares to put into it up to that point. It'll more than likely be everything he's already published, put it into the same book, rework some of the stuff and whatnot. So that's kind of how we came out of it and said, okay, let's just do our own small press and say that we're a small press. And it dawned on me and still seems to me that that's the gist, at the least, of being a small press. I don't know. Maybe it's not that easy, but that's how we do it.
Yeah, that's, you've got this, which is, like, understandable. Like, I get, like, a lot of presses that I talk to being in the small press and publishing in it for a while, and, you know, some people are very, some got a name, some are known, some are not known, some do staple chaps, some do, you know, actually perfect bound books, et cetera, et cetera. But it seems that you've got this, like, old-school Walt Whitman approach to it, do-it-yourself, get your own words out. I mean, which you got to start there somewhere. I mean, would you agree or no? Am I completely off?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we got to start somewhere. We've got to finish somewhere. We just have to be done. Obviously, you've been doing this. You've been involved in this for some period of time. I've listened to some of these other shows that you've done. They're all respectable. we all kind of are coming from a similar point of view, and there's no money to be made. I don't know that anybody that we have published is particularly looking to be the next poet laureate of their country. And I don't know that any of us would turn it down if it came our way. But there is sort of a way to infiltrate and do the large-scale book signings and do the lectures. And eventually it might all lead up to that, but I don't know of anybody that's just going to go online and say, hey, we like your stuff. We're Penguin Books. We want to publish you. Here's $50,000. Give us a poetry manuscript, and we're guaranteed we're going to publish it and pay you for it. It just doesn't work that way.
I do know the one difference I noticed, that, like, when it comes to poetry, at least, in the small press or independent press, whatever, and then you got the larger presses, and there's very, very, very few. I mean, even the dead masters, quote unquote, whoever your personal one might be, usually had to have jobs themselves. But where's the next plateau after publishing your books on the independent press anyways? Awards, recognition? I mean, there's no, because I go into, like, say, like a bookstore, and the poetry books there by whoever, Lee Poe or whoever is the heir on the bookshelf, is collecting just as much dust as I would see anywhere else. So I personally don't think there's a difference.
No, you got to gut it out. You got to gut it out.
I think you're
life itself is gutting it out.
Yeah. Your constraints are, you're less constrained, or no, I don't know if constraint is the word, but you're less chained down in the independent press. You have more freedom. I like that I think.
And what I get from it as being a publisher, being an editor, it's definitely more intimate. You know, I get to work firsthand with the writers, the poets, the people involved, the artists. You know, I'm on top of all that, but I'm not the authority. You know, I mean, I get to work with all these people. I kind of make my own little dream come true every time that I'm working on a manuscript and publishing a book. I get to work with people that I would more than likely not know otherwise. And not only do I get to work with them, I really get to know them on a very human and personal level. I've always sought that in life in general. I don't like shallow. I don't like passing by and, you know, how's the day? Oh, it's okay. I'm very much a person, and I look for this in our writing and our writers as well. I'm very much a person. Do not ask me how I'm doing today if you really do not want to know how I'm doing today. Because I'm more than likely going to tell you more than what you want to know about how I'm doing today.
Say if there's someone listening that, like, neither one of us know, and there's just, like, young, aspiring poet, and they're pretty good. And they're like, oh, dog, and a chain press, they sound pretty cool. Are you do you select who you want to publish, or is it or do you take submissions?
I generally, solicit. I do generally prefer to solicit my own manuscripts from people that I have maybe kept an eye on for a while, or I've read in certain circles, or just come across and, you know, look them up, seek their work, read it. With all of this digital media we have nowadays, this social networking, it's really easy to get in touch with people and make these things happen. I don't guarantee anybody anything. Even if I say, hey, I'd like to see one of your manuscripts, I certainly don't say, I want to see one of your manuscripts and I'm going to publish it. You know, it's like, hey, I want to see this. I want to see if we can work together. I'm not paying anybody, and I don't want to work particularly with anybody that's expecting to be paid. I've had some conversations with some other publishers that are run, some other presses that are run by younger publishers, and they're asking me, how do you self-sustain? You know, I'm getting tons of manuscripts, and these people are wanting to split royalties, and I'm like, royalties? Can you define that for me in the small press? Royalties, right? What the fuck is that, right?
Like I got, like, a writing contract, but I only get a percentage, and it's the same percentage as a large house would give somebody. But let's face it, none of us are genre writers, like Grisman or whatever, how you say his name. 12 to 15% to him would, you know, be millions of dollars for 12 to 15% to someone like me would be, I don't know, a case of beer and some nachos.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You might get $7-$8. Generally, we do the base, you know, we do contributor copies. We'll promote it as much as we care to, as long as it's worth it to promote it. I do a great deal of my own distribution. I try to get in contact with as many small independent bookstores as I possibly can throughout the United States and say, hey, here's who we are. This is what we do. It comes out of my own pocket. I will send you a couple of books, and you can read them. If you want some, here's where you can order them, or you can order them directly through me. If it's local enough, I'll just take it in there and hand it to them. And that's the best way. I mean, it's, you know, set up a booth at somewhere and say this is what we do. You're always going to sell 2, 3, 4, 5 books. You're rarely going to walk away with a big distribution contract.
Well, I do notice that one of your future authors or poets and someone who's on my show and someone I've known probably about since the MySpace days, like 7 or 8 years ago. And I say MySpace days is not as in like that we're, you know, Facebook poets or something, but with the internet, you meet people that way. It's
no, I get it. I mean, that's where a lot of this came from was just like, hey, this can be done. And now we have a large scale connection. We have a way to connect. It's not like we are going to hitchhike across America from San Fran to New York and go to a reading and leave the next day and do another.
Yeah, it's not that everything's way too expensive and consumer based to do that anymore. And but you do have Dina Guzman, I believe.
Yes, Dina Rash, good old Dina Rash. We do have her lined up. She's sent us a manuscript. She's tweaking that manuscript, and we're in no hurry. Or do we have a time frame set for that? It's all on her. It's all on any writer to get me something. Once they get me something, that's when it all begins. Rarely is it just so tight that I can do what?
We have a caller for you.
Let's
hear it. It's from your area, 828. Hello, 828. You're on with Beasley Barrington. Hello?
Hey, Beasley. Beasley, I have a question. Who would win in a fight, a grilled cheese sandwich or a taco?
Probably neither. They would probably beat the shit out of each other till they were both covered in cheese and smothered to their demise.
Excellent.
Or they would get eaten first and they'd never make it to the fight.
I'd eat both.
Oh, that is the most original question on this show yet.
did they say who they were?
No.
Okay, good.
This?
Thank you. We don't know who you are.
It is from your area code, so
well,
probably
who knows? This is a wild and crazy area, man. This is a wild and crazy area, and we certainly hope that there's people out there interested and aware and ready to read.
That was a crazy question, but that's cool. We welcome the crazies. By the way, if you would like to call in and ask Beasley a crazy question or a normal question or any kind of question, feel free to do so. Do you have any of the poetry or poets there that you'd like to like read or something, or do you just want to say
something? I have some if you'd like for me to hear for me to read some. I hope I can give what I have to read out of our releases a decent voice, since some of it's not mine, and I'll roll with some of that for a minute. And first thing I'll read from a release we put out this winter from Mike Mraz. Are you aware of Mike Mraz? He seems to be around.
People.
He seems to be somewhat of an enigma. But he was completely enjoyable to work with. He had no qualms. We changed a few things here and there. He didn't complain. He didn't bitch. He wasn't a prima donna, which made me like what I was working on with him even more. So let me get out my flashlight, because I am sitting outside by firelight and lantern light, and I'm going to need a flashlight. to find.
We always welcome the Mike Mraz. I've known this fellow for
I'm surprised we didn't try to get him on the show. I don't know much about him, and I've never talked to him in person. We did all of our contact through email and social media.
It's hard to get a hold of.
Yeah, and you know what? He sent me about the cleanest manuscript I could possibly ask for, so I really didn't have to do much other than kind of he allowed me to pretty much put it in a different order than he sent it. I kind of pride myself as a publisher and an editor. My specialty is kind of taking what you send me and putting it together to make it a readable collection from A to Z, you know. And I think that a good publisher and editor have to do that for you. You're never going to send them such a clean script that they just put it into a PDF and voila. He actually even allowed me to change the title. We didn't change it much, but I thought we could come up with something that was a little more poignant, and I believe we did in Watching It Burn. This is a poem called To Be Tough During the Lean Years from Mike Mraz from Watching It Burn. To be tough during the lean years is a mighty thing, indeed. To sit there and cry is not. To blame others for your mistakes is not. To become bitter at the editor is not. To be tough during the lean years is a mighty thing, indeed. To stand the forces of failure and wait it out. To keep a steady stance and believe in what you said and not renege in hopes of cutting the deal with the gods. To be tough during the lean years is a mighty thing, indeed. You know, and we look for that. We look for grit. We look for grind. We look for reality. I don't prefer surrealism. I can maybe point you to some other presses that might be involved in something. If you decide you want to send me a manuscript out of the blue, I certainly invite that. I just hope we're prepared for our feelings to be manipulated.
In many ways, I think the writer, some don't, but some do take that journey. I think, like, my last book was partial or half, like, surreal, but, you know, I think it's just part of the writing it through. I haven't written a surreal poem probably myself in two, three years, but I prefer the what you're talking about, the down to the bone of it all.
Yeah, if it's the book that you sent me sometime this winter, that was quite an endeavor. That was a big, thick book. There was a lot of poems in there, and I would not fault you for having to mix it up a bit. That was more than a chapbook, and we're kind of getting to the point where I'm starting to look for bigger manuscripts. I did go and purchase the big ISBN package, so we do offer ISBNs if a book is worthy, because that's an expensive endeavor. But not everybody wants that. Some people just want the chapbook, and I am getting some solid manuscripts from people that I haven't asked for that say, hey, we like what you do. We like what we think we know you do. We would like to be involved with how you're doing things. Here's my manuscript. I wouldn't say I'm buried in them, but I have some that I'm not going to use. Do I have a what?
You have a limit, like how many books you're doing a year, or is it just how it feels for you?
Well, I probably should. Right now, I'm fortunate enough to actually have day jobs that are helping me be able to do this at a level that's probably a little more than most people would say is safe for a small press, but it's an endeavor that I fully enjoy, something I want to be involved with, something that I'm not too sure what direction it's headed, and that's exactly why I like it. I don't know where it's going. I have my ideas, and it just depends on what keeps coming. I should probably put a limit at 3 to 5, and I'd like to do 5 a year, but, you know, I do have a life to live on top of that. I do have things to take care of. I have Mrs. Guzman lined up for some point in time. I have a really clean, tight, awesome manuscript ready to put into place for a guy named Howie Good, who you've probably seen here and there. He gets a lot of Lit Mag love. He gets a lot of his stuff published in lots of different Lit Mags, and he sent me a manuscript probably 5 months ago. But I was still working on The Blackbird Sings, The Blues with Laughter, Matt Gould's new book that we've just put out. And, you know, I've got to set some time aside to continue small scale promotion and distribution with that probably up through the rest of this month. And then I am going to take a break at some point in July just to chill out and live where I live and do what I do and head to the ocean for some time and take care of some personal business. So I'm looking to have Howie's out hopefully no later than the end of August, 1st of September. So I don't want to put a limit on it. I'm gonna have to put a limit on it, but I'm certainly not trying to.
Why'd you give us some more of your authors or yourself or whatever?
I'll read another one from Mraz, and then I will go into a couple more after that. So I'll read two or three here. This is the girl with the golden eyes from Mike Mraz from Watching It Burn as well. The girl with the golden eyes has crooked teeth, dresses badly, and smells of liquor. She comes in and buys Evan Williams from you, looks at you, and smiles and says, "I'll see you later." The girl with the golden eyes is an alcoholic, duped up, senselessly reeking of innocence and shame. She is everything. She is everyone.
Nice.
I will read one from, is this 2010? The Fire Is Breathing on Me by Matt Gould. The Gist of Being Alive. In the morning we joined the doves and all that was, to breathe, nothing but the dust that don't douse the fire. Poetry had been walking in the dark until I put my tongue back in my mouth. It had been drinking the few beers that were left from other days and nights. It was lonely and seductive. It was thinking about a midnight romance in a small-scale town, not quite a city, but still full of bricks. Feeding the old to the young at such an hour, this has become too much for itself. A bit of ash in what is spilled, a faint break in the hue, a dream of flight, the quintessence at the edge. Under these bones we come out of our skin, not so much gasping as grasping for the split.
Mm.
And we'll do one more, and I'll turn it back over to you. This is also from The Fire Is Breathing on Me from Matt Gould. An astronomical simplicity in the hands of conquerors. The barbarians have calmed, changed face. They have given the world to their children, who play with it like medieval ingrates, as if it is a flattening beach ball, pushing it around and kicking it harder than necessary. Never blowing it back up to toss in a circle of cheer, just letting it deflate and lay there in muck. They have no idea it is begging to bounce, hand upon hand, thrusting and bumping back amongst the planets, steadying its orbit, a vision that takes what we know as a millions of years to create.
Nice.
And for anyone that doesn't, maybe follow what we do, specifically maybe what Matt does, kind of what he's got going on in some of his work, his thesis, so to speak. We have a little saying here at Dog on a Chain Press that says Dog on a Chain Press, and underneath it, our byline is the subtle apocalypse that we all dream of. And that comes from some poem or some conversation at some point between us. And a lot of that is a very loose interpretation of what Matt does a lot of. This whole end of the world thing that people get very obsessed about and almost wish upon society, it's the end of the world, everything's just so fucking crazy, as if it's not a natural balance. And Matt's kind of grabbed onto that, and he kind of weaves it in and out of each collection that we've done and that he's given to us. And maybe as they read through some of his books, if they end up with his books in their hands, they wonder, well, what the hell is this guy talking about, or where is this coming from, or what does this mean? A lot of it is just kind of waking up every day to the end of the world, and it just not being as big a deal as we thought it was. And that's just something
that's a good way to put it. Now, the question I do have is a question I ask every single person, and pros and cons, or maybe there's just pro and just con. Do you feel that the internet, like Facebook or things like that, serve a purpose in this whole thing? Like, for example, I think it does serve a purpose because I was able to connect to people that I wouldn't have been able to where I was living. I might have just been like, you know, going to the local readings with the same people for my entire life. And the internet actually helped me connect to publishers or events or other people, you know. But I also, on the downside, I think it, you know, like anything else in life, like there's bad telephone repairmen, bad basketball players. I think it, like, you know, dilutes the talent pool a little bit. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it certainly feeds into it. It feeds the hysteria that us people, we just have to have hysteria, man. I mean, if it wasn't for fucking hysteria, what else would there be? You know, it would just be a bunch of reality TV, but it wouldn't be on TV. We couldn't sit around and watch other people's fucking life fall apart. We could only sit back and watch our own lives fall apart. It serves a huge purpose. Everything serves a purpose. If I am anything, if we are anything, I am anti-anti. There's nothing like somebody getting on Facebook and posting an anti-Facebook rant, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's nothing like people just tearing everything down simply to tear it down. I very much think everything that we're involved in, everything around us serves a purpose, whether it be the purpose for, okay, fuck that, I don't want to do with that, or hey, yeah, so yeah, it serves a purpose, it serves a huge purpose. And I'm the same way. Years ago, 10, 12, 15 years ago, I don't even know, when I was a tyke, when we were younger, you know, less hungry, we had readings with a group of poets in Dayton, Ohio, and they went by Mad River. And I can only imagine perhaps what that could have become if there was greater outreach then, other than, hey, we have a reading this month, and it's down at the same place we always have it. It started with 6 people, and then it went to 12, and then by the time we were kind of over it ourselves, there was 100 to 200 people showing up to see what was going down with the Mad River thing this month. And it certainly allows for things like you and I are doing right now. It certainly allows for Doggone Chain Press to put out a book and bombard the hell out of people with, hey, I just released this book, we just released this book, give it a look, give it a look, give it a look. And I can send it out to somewhere in Idaho, and maybe somewhere has seen it, and they walk across, they walk down the street, they go past their local bookstore, and for some reason there is this book sitting in the window, and they've seen it before. I would hope it serves a purpose. If it doesn't, if someone else doesn't think it does, then good for them. But it certainly doesn't bother me whatsoever to use anything and everything at our disposal. That's what people do. I mean, we suck up resources until they're fucking dead and gone.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think it definitely has its purpose. Like I said, if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have been reading and Los Angeles with, you know, S.A. Griffin or my friends out there. Like, if I wouldn't have known them, you know, because I wouldn't have been like, oh, I think I'll just take a hitchhike to Los Angeles and see what's going on out there, because it wasn't the 50s. It's not the 50s anymore. You can't do that.
I would say probably the only thing that it does allow for is maybe a little less respect amongst the small presses or the independent people or the writers or whatever you want to call it. It seems like it's very hard to kind of infiltrate and say, hey, man, you know, I'll talk you up if you'll talk me up. It seems like if anything, it might over-personalize the experience to where people don't think as much as extending a hand and saying, hey, you know, I'm not fully aware of this particular press, but I've seen them around, and here's something they just did. I mean, I do the hell out of that stuff anywhere I go. I try not to just talk about Doggone Chain Press. And I know you're not either. I mean, you wouldn't be doing this show if you weren't either. But there certainly seems to be a movement out there to shut everyone down but themselves. And that's what I mean by I'm anti. I can't stand people who live off the government but badmouth their government. I can't stand anybody just being against things for the sake of being against things, and they don't even know why.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I think I don't believe in the philosophy of let's scratch each other's backs all the time, because I don't know. Writing is a selfish endeavor, as it should be in many ways, because it's just you and the pen, you know, or the keyboard. So, you know, I did the show to bring all different aspects to a listening audience, different writers of different backgrounds, and, you know, because I think that it all serves a purpose in a way for something, you know, because somebody might love my stuff, but some other people might hate it. So I try to bring different views and opinions on, but I don't believe in, like, hey, man, you did me a favor, so I'll do you one. But I usually do, you know, because I have friends' work or publishers' work that I respect and admire, and I believe that anything that could help them, you know, that's why I do this.
Right.
Show.
Help yeah, people. We hope to be added to that list. We're all about the value and raising the fucking flag. I mean, that's what we're all about.
And we're all in the same boat when it boils down to it, but there are people who do it every single day, like myself or 50 other people I know that do it every day because they have no choice. They love it. It's real to them. And then there are those that do it once in a while as a hobby and just feels they deserve all the respect in the world when they put no elbow grease in it. And that's another topic for another day. But we're down to like 10 minutes, so why don't you let the listeners know how they can find the books or the stuff, and, you know,
well, they
stuff.
can certainly go to our lulu.com. That's our link that you can find on my Facebook page. Beasley Barrington Presents. Mrs. Guzman is supposed to be working, amongst many other things, on a WordPress website for us. I don't know how far along we are with that. We'll have that up and going so that we can, you know, you can just go straight to our Dog on the Chain Press website. I just kind of dread having to upkeep that at some point, which is why we don't have one at this point in time. I'm still very much books in hand and wherever I'm at and wherever I can get them to. And I'm not 100% certain of who's carrying them and who isn't carrying them in other places. You can go to our lulu.com because we do use print on demand. It's just something that makes my life and my job a little bit easier. It makes the books a little easier to get, both for me and anyone that wants to get them. They can also hit me up at dogonthechainpress@yahoo.com if they have any interest whatsoever in my opinion or getting me a manuscript or saying, hey, we want 3 or 4 books. Can you get them to us? What does it take? I prefer you go direct. If you go direct to us at email, I can save you on the obvious taxes and shipping. It just goes direct to me. Any funds that do come in to Dog on a Chain Press go directly back to the press one way or another, whether it's in shipping books out or buying stickers. It all goes back to the press. It doesn't go into anybody's pocket. And that's a general agreement that we have with anyone that we are publishing, that, you know, we're trying to grow the press. We're trying to grow you as a writer and your recognition as well. So we try to work together that way. Those are the basic ways. We do have, if you're in North Carolina and you're in this area, we do get books down to Downtown Books and News, Viva La Downtown Books and News, on Lexington Avenue in Asheville, North Carolina. And they seem to sell really well down there. I don't hear much from anyone that's buying them down there, but they certainly seem to be gone every time I go down there with more books. And if you need to get them wherever you are, you just need to get in touch with me, Beasley Barrington, and I will get them to you until I go broke.
All right. But it seems that you're definitely doing the old school way. Like, you're, like, promoting it, like, book fairs, and you're just, like, packing
We did do a gig in Vancouver, Canada. You know, how does somebody from North Carolina get a handful of books to Vancouver, British Columbia, to a Poetry is Dead deal there? It was some gallery that was showcasing more the artwork and the bookmaking more so than the poetry and the writing itself. We did that this spring. That was a pretty cool thing for us to be involved in. We're sending some work to the Printers Ball in Chicago. I'm not 100% sure what the hell that is, but we are sending some work there. That's July 21st. It's some sort of book fair, expo, thingamajig. I'm not clear what it is, but we'll have stuff there. We have books in Chicago at a cool bookstore called Quimby's. I don't even know where it's at, but we do have stuff there. There used to be some stuff in Louisville, Kentucky, at one of the 2 bookstores there. I don't know if they're still sitting on it or not. That's the way I like to do it. I mean, if somebody wants to come through and order 100, that would be awesome. But
Let me ask you, how do you get, like, if there's any startup presses out there that might be listening, how do you get your books into these bookstores?
So you walk in the door, you send emails, you call, you talk, you like I said, it's all about ballyhoo and raising the flag and acting like you know what the fuck you're doing, and hopefully you do know what the fuck you're doing, because it's just like anything else in life. If you don't know what you're doing, you're going to get called out on it. We've been fairly small-scale successful, and I haven't had too many people say, dude, you're a hack, get away from us, you know, I mean, everyone's pretty interested, and I think that's just kind of the way America has always been, and I think it's going back to a lot of that. The kids are into it. Older people are going back to these do-it-yourself movements, and I just think it's a respect issue, you know. It's not like I walk in with a cigar and a crazy suit on and say, here's my stuff, you need to have this in here, you know. I like walk in like a little child in my Sunday's best that I've been wearing all week and just kind of talk it up and say, here's a few copies, you know, you want to check it out, let me know. Generally they say, yeah, we wish more people would, you know, we wish we had more of this. Because like you said,
so
you know, how many copies of John Grisham are you going to sell today? You know, I mean, once you sell it to who's going to buy it, you've sold it, and then it's going to sit there on your shelf until you send it back to his distributor.
But having worked in in those large book chains, they're all about profit. When your local bookstore is interested in poetry or local authors or small presses or things like that, when Barnes & Noble is just going to, you know, push what sells, they don't give a shit whose name or how much elbow grease or study went into it.
Yeah, we don't deal much with them. Most of those people have, like, you know, you can go to their website and it'll say, you know, if you want to try to get your books to us, and you send them an email and you send them a link to your stuff and a quick info about you, and they'll never get back to you. Or they will. You know, I've had some interest from a bookstore here in the South called Malaprops, and, you know, they're looking at our stuff and they might carry some, you know. Clap, clap, yippity-yay. You know, if they do, that's great. If they don't, it's not going to change the way I operate.
Yeah, I understand. So,
All I can say is it's worth reading. I wouldn't publish it if I didn't feel it was worth reading, and I haven't had anybody come and say, dude, quit publishing this fucking drivel. What are you doing? You're wasting your time. You're wasting my time. You're wasting your money. I've had nobody say that. And once you get a book in your hand and you get the time and the place to sit down and look at it and feel it and read it and breathe it and chew on it and smell it and smother it in cheese or whatever you want to do with it, you're that kind of person. And if you're that kind of person, you need to pick up what we're putting out. You know, I certainly have plenty of things in the works. I would like to at some point bring everybody together, do a reading, make it a big hubbub, make it a big to-do, bring them up here to the mountain, drink a bunch of beer, eat a bunch of food, stand around the fire and do what we do, you know. I'd certainly like to bring everybody together that we've published at some point in time. We've got people from L.A. We've got people in Connecticut. That's Justin Reynolds. I got Michael Heflinger in New Jersey. I personally grew up with him. Matt and I are right here on the mountaintop. Tina's out in Portland. Howie Good's in New York. I mean, we're all over the place.
Hello? Well, you broke up, lost your butt. It is the end of the show.
Am I there?
Yeah, you're here now. It is the end of the show. The lady has come on and let me know. But it was a pleasure having you and Dog and the Chain Press on the show tonight.
Indeed. I appreciate it. Viva la.
Right. And that was Beasley Barrington of Dog and the Chain Press. And you see all the stuff. If you'd like to contact him on a Facebook page, all the emails, all the information that you need. If you don't have him on the Facebook page, he's Beasley Barrington Presents. You can find him through mine, or he's connected through a lot of other people. Next week's show will be April Michelle Bratton and her poetry. So, I don't know, what the fuck ever.